Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us today is the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service, Ms. Mangwashi Victoria Rhea Piecha. The National Commissioner's career portfolio has encompassed multiple executive roles, including work with Absa Bank, Transnet. She has served in the capacity of chairperson for several entities, namely the Presidential State-Owned Enterprise Review Committee, the Road Traffic Management Corporation, as well as the National Welfare Forum, and is actively involved in women's empowerment. She is a member of the International Women's Forum of South Africa. Welcome to the show, National Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Doctor. I really appreciate the invitation, and I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Likewise, we are too. Now, National Commissioner, today you hold one of the highest positions in office, and you've broken numerous glass ceilings, and in that process, you've become a role model for millions of women and girls in South Africa. Can you share with us a few of the landmarks in your career and when you understood that serving your country would be such a big part of your destiny?
When you travel this journey, it's when you get into interviews such as this that you start saying, okay, probably there are landmarks. What are those? Because ordinarily for me, I'm celebrating a life that I have, and I'm just giving it my best, and I'm trying to leave every epoch to the best of my ability. And perhaps I can go back a little bit because I grew up in a very rural environment. I had parents who were teachers, and they were teaching away from where we were living. I was with my grandmother. My grandmother was a very hardworking woman. You know, she tilled the ground to grow food for us. She maintained the house. She lost her husband at a very early age. So the one thing I picked up from her was that she was compromising, doing everything and anything, sewing wedding gowns. From that to being a private teacher in the school to being a homekeeper. But the one big lesson that I picked up from her was that hard work pays. I've also picked up from her that she had six children that she had to grow, you know, to bring up on her own without her husband. And when I looked at them, they were all professionals. And coming from a very rural area, being sent to schools from far away, and she worked very hard. And of those children, you know, ultimately when I looked at all of them, they were teachers, they were nurses, they were graduates in their family, and it was those years. So I just saw something that I liked in her. And I looked at her, she was a very strong leader in the community, in the church, and just teaching hygiene. You know, she wasn't a teacher, but she would have clubs of women to teach hygiene, how to do things, some very rural recipes and all those things. So I saw a lot in her. Mm.
She sounded like an incredible woman.
Exactly. And I'm from a family of six girls. Yeah, there's no boy in the family. And my father, and equally my mother, but my father actually believed in, I would say, gender parity with hindsight. We did everything. We washed the cars, we painted the house. When he was repairing the house, building, doing something else, we would work with him.
That's very forward thinking for his generation.
Exactly, because he wanted us to do it. We did our garden, we did everything, because there was no other boy-type job. Well, you know, that type of thing. So driving, very, very early in the years, he was saying, you must learn how to drive and all that. And I remember one day I was traveling with him and we were seeing this woman driving a Gigi car, it's a government car. And I was saying, and I was shocked, and I said, ah, Papa, a woman driving a car, who is she? And he said to me, she's a social worker. And I said, what's a social worker? And in my mind then, it already registered to say, oh, social work, power, driving car, and all that. And I guess that's what influenced me also, and studying social work, because that time I was seeing a different woman doing something different from the ordinary women that I was seeing. Being in a rural area, seeing a woman driving a car was a very, very abnormal thing. So it's some of those things, just from a background point of view, that started influenced me. And I went to high school, and I just thought, you know, the can-do attitude to say things can be done, because I wasn't even looking, I wasn't conscious, I wasn't looking at it from a man, women, whatever. I think even when I got to school, at as early as we had Form 2, which is now what? Standard 8, I think. At that age, I was already in the national school debating team. And I was probably the only girl from a lower class with guys who were in matric and all that. But I just thought it can be done. Well, a lot has happened since. I found myself in the welfare sector, having studied social work. And even in the welfare sector, it quickly came. I became, you know, within 7 years of my starting to work, I was already heading a unit in child welfare in Atteridgeville. Then I moved to the Chamber of Mines. Then I moved to child welfare. And in child welfare, national child welfare, I became the first woman director for development. They had had directors, but the first black woman director, I became one. And then I moved to Transnet. And in Transnet, I must say, you know, I was part of those women who, when our country got freedom, we went into an area which was very, very close first to us as blacks. We were introduced as professionals in that, you know, in that environment. I worked with very strong women, you know. I remember people like Tomato Sorobe, Minister Stella Skau, who was a serious experimenter, and she believed in women. She took us, she placed us there, and they started seeing women in that environment. And I moved to the ports, where we were tasked with the responsibility of restructuring Portnet so that it can look like other, you know, maritime operations in the world. I was in that team that was working at separating the operational side of the ports to the landlord side of ports. So we did that. That is why today you have Port Operations and National Port Authority. We worked hard to do it. And those were foreign environments. We had never been in maritime, but we worked very hard. I then joined the maritime side of the landlord side of things. And in that space, I remember, you know, I was participating in many associations in the maritime environment, one of which was the International Association for Ports and Harbors. And we managed to bring the very first international conference of all ports into Africa for the first time in their 50 years of existence. And I chaired that conference. It came to Durban, and 2,300 delegates from all the ports of the world.
That's a significant conference.
So, and for me, I went to some of the conference, and I said, we can do it. And I, as an executive, we agreed, we contested, we won it, and we did it. And serving in those committees was very good, you know, and a lot had happened. And we opened our ports to the continent. I was serving on a number of the PAMESA, the Association of Ports in Africa. We formed a Pan-African port movement. And I sat there, and in most of the meetings, you know, I would go to Kobe in Japan, and I'd be the one woman. And I'd be sitting with a lot of men coming from whatever. But for me, it was still, I could see the discord. But I was very committed to making it happen, to say, look, it's something that we must show as women that it can be done. Moved to the banking, also enjoyed myself there.
They're quite diverse careers in terms of being from the maritime space and then moving into the banking sector.
Yes. Mm.
How did that dynamic take place?
banking was also trying to look at women participation, because again, it was a very male-dominated environment, and being one of the group executives, we were few. I think at that point in time, the women group executives were probably four when I got to APSA and all those type
of very
things.
Low.
And basically, it was also important for us to just show that things can be done. And most of the banks were starting really to look at absorbing women, Standard Bank, Net Bank, and all that. But I can still say now, they're still struggling to have a significant women presence in that space.
And at least from an APSA point of view, the current CEO is a woman. We've got Maria Ramos.
Precisely.
In place. And so I think having that figurehead helps the throughput.
Very important. We can do more. We can do more. I think there are many capable women in banking that could be able to come in at that space. And I've had an opportunity of doing many other, you know, things on the BID committee when we were going to get the 2010 Soccer Cup. It was good to sit in that board because I participated in the board that brought the BID into the country. A lot of work had been done, Road Accident Fund, SOE, you know, the state-owned enterprises, and I can see now the report is coming to use because they are looking at using some of the elements to start transforming the state-owned enterprises that are there.
It must be a great feeling to see your legacy in play with the hard work that you've put into it,
yeah.
Invested and coming out.
Yeah, and even in the Welfare Forum, just going back, you know, when 1994 came, we started working towards saying, how are we transforming welfare? So the Welfare Forum was a cooperation of many NGOs and many structures in welfare. And I was fortunate to be the first chair of that structure. That led to the development of the current White Paper for Welfare. So I participated also in the development of the White Paper for Welfare. So a lot has happened in my life. And then came to the police.
Once again, another male-dominated environment.
Yeah. And in 100 years, you know, being the first woman leader when the police was turning 100 years. So it took 100 years for a woman leader to come into the police environment. But again, also, then there is the Association of Police Chiefs of SADC. Last year, I was appointed to be the chairperson of it, and it was the first time it was chaired by a woman. So
can you take us through some of those collaborations and work that you're doing in that capacity in SADC, so working with different countries on the continent?
SAPCO is an association of all policing agencies in the SADC environment, in the SADC region. So we meet. We have that association, all police chiefs of SADC, we meet to look at how we ensure that we keep the region safe, peaceful, and secure. So there's a lot of cross-border policing that takes place because crime knows no borders.
It doesn't.
It doesn't need a visa. So we need to cooperate to ensure that whilst we're focusing on our own domestic stability, safety, and security, we must collaborate to ensure that we have regional safety and security and stability. We collaborate also on issues of training. We've just launched the SADC Police Training Academy, where we're looking at other transversal skills that we require as a region. It will be hosted by Zimbabwe. We also have an Interpol Bureau, a regional Interpol Bureau, that we all use to look at how we deal with international crimes collectively. So the region also collaborates with other regions in the Pan-African environment. So, for instance, recently we had a bilateral collaboration meeting with EAPCO, which is the Eastern African region, and we'll be having a joint operation to look at, which will be simultaneous. So all the country at a particular given time will be going to look for stolen cars and whatever. So we'll have those simultaneous operations across all the borders, including the Eastern African countries and ourselves. So we do those type of things.
National Commissioner, looking at your impressive resume, which you've highlighted on some of those achievements, particularly being firsts and looking at the male-dominated environments that you've occupied, one thing comes to mind: strength and compassion entwined together. Whether it's been your position as National Police Commissioner, your involvement in women empowerment organizations, or the fact that you are a wife, mother, and grandmother, it seems that your strength comes from your compassion. What's your perspective on this?
One thing I can say is that compassion is a very strong woman quality. I'm not sure whether it comes from us being natural naturals, but ordinarily, and it's once you have compassion in anything you do, you have 50% of the race, because you will do anything to ensure that things work. And I do believe that a lot of these organizations, it has been my attitude when I go to any organization to say, I bring with me as a woman a lot of compassion, because the nurturing role that we have, you know, to get children to be the right children, to be educated, to have values, to establish a social system in the family, we take it for granted, but it's a lot of work that we drive into that as CEOs of the home and caretakers. We haven't written that science as women, but I want to say there is a science behind that. And part of the drivers for that is, you know, that keen drive to ensure that you can pull people with, and we can make it happen beyond I can make it happen. So compassion for me is a very, very big attribute in anything that one does. And it doesn't matter what it is, whether I'm going to help the church, whether I am in the police, whether I am in my home, whether I am just help working with a group of people elsewhere, that investment is so crucial and it does yield. So that I will put up front. The other issue that I think has worked for me in my career is work ethic. It's a very crucial thing, because whatever you do, you must give it your all, your pieces of hair, you know, portion of your nails, because work ethic does certain things for you, because you can't sleep until you say this thing must be done and whatever, and you don't become a time person. It must happen.
It's a delivering on the output.
Precisely. It must happen.
Well, thank you for sharing some of your personal drivers. We'll take a short break.
Hi, this is Lira, South African Afro Soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amelia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
Today, we're talking to the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service, Ria Piecha. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. In our previous segment, the National Commissioner shared some of her qualities in terms of key drivers being compassion, work ethic, an opportunity to embrace every opportunity that comes your way, and the effects of contributing and making a difference to the people that we serve, with a wonderful mantra of hard work pays and a can-do attitude. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now, continuing with our discussion, National Commissioner, throughout your career, you have been involved in women's empowerment, and you've demonstrated on all of the firsts that you've achieved in your respective elements of your career. You're a member of the International Women's Forum of South Africa. You've served as a coach and mentor, linking to mentoring programs of various organizations, including the Association for Black Securities and Investment Professionals, International Women's Forum South Africa, African Woman Chartered Accountants, the Grusha Michel Scholarship, and I know that you also have a number of initiatives in place within the South African Police Service. Can you please tell us a little bit more about the work that is happening, whether it's the Women's Network in South Africa, which I believe has now been a model that is now being adopted into other SADC countries, or the convening of women's police?
Let me start off by what we are busy now, and then I can go back to some of the issues that you've just touched on. In the police, one of the things that needs to be grappled with is gender representativity. You would know that as a government locally, you know, the whole issue of 50-50% representation has been pushed in government departments, in parliament, and all those type of issues. We too are grappling with that in the police service because it's a performance indicator for all the accounting officers.
And are you still striving to get to the 50-50 level, or what are we at now?
We're working towards that. Currently, we're sitting at about 37%. As the South African Police Service, and I'm indeed very proud of that, because in terms of, if I take the executive, for instance, in terms of the 10 commissioners that are there in the country, 10 commissioners, it's myself and the 9 commissioners of the provinces, because the constitution requires that we have that leadership in terms of the police. So there's the national CEO, who's the national commissioner, myself, and each province has a CEO, who's the provincial commissioner. We're sitting at 50-50% because it's 5 women and 5 men, which shows that, you know, we've progressed to introduce women in the leadership of police. It's the first generation of women leading in that environment. We also have what you call divisional commissioners. The divisional commissioners are, you know, the team. It would be my executive, my operational executive team at a national level. The province will also have the provincial executive operational team. We're making strides. I mean, if I just look at some of the women that we've appointed, our head of HR is a woman, the divisional commissioner there. The woman that is leading our crime intelligence in the country is a woman. The person who's leading our crime intelligence in the country is a woman, Dr. Zulu. The woman who's leading the technology environment of SAPS.
So there's a strong drive in
there's
terms of increasing representation.
Exactly,
of women.
Yeah, and normalizing it, because it's a very male-dominated environment. So we're doing a lot there. What we've also done ordinarily is to ensure that we organize ourselves as women so that we share power and energy amongst ourselves. When I got to the police, I found that they have a police women's network. So that was a very good platform, which I liked. And we started working very hard on that. We used that platform to actually host the largest conference of women police in the country for the first time in the continent of Africa. So we brought together over 1,300 women from over 120 countries all over the world.
So this was a global conference?
It was a global conference. They gathered in Durban. They loved it. And I can also tell you that through strong cooperation, communication, we've managed now to influence each region, each country now in the SADC region has a police, a woman network, and we'll be holding our first development conference as the SADC Women's Network now around October, November here in South Africa. So there's a lot that we're doing, and there's a lot of conscientization. We track women representativity as a region too. It's an indicator. When we meet as police chiefs, we check how we are doing. So we influence each other in a way because we're all trying to say, let women be represented also.
And our National Commissioner, as a leader in the police force and a leader for women, I believe that women's leadership is vitally important to the future of women across Africa, not just within each of our countries. And it sounds like you have done a lot of work in terms of harmonizing and integrating with different countries. As a woman who constantly works hard to succeed, or should I say twice or three times as hard, how do you see female leadership in South Africa?
I'm very inspired by what our country has achieved. Beyond numbers and beyond breaking through, you know, a number of areas that traditionally have not been broken into, I think just the commitment and the focus on gender development has been quite significant, and I want to congratulate our government for driving that, because they created the legislative and regulatory framework that drove all of us. Whether you are looking at the charters that are driving business, or you're looking at the BBBE policy. So all of us, business, government, we're looking at the inclusion of women as part of our celebration of our freedom. I must say, in that regard, a lot has been done. But I also want to say it is important to leverage women leadership. And I also would want to argue that, for me, it is a rudiment for optimal success for any country. If you're not able to pull your women and leverage their capacity to do particular things, and I would even argue that the change that we're waiting for, that we haven't as yet experienced, is lying in women. The more we have women leadership, the more we will start realizing that diversity works, and diversity yields better than just a monolithic approach of looking at one gender. I argue that we bring different qualities as women, and I argue for equal but different polarity, because I can't do it like a man. I do not want to be a second-rate man. I'm not a second-hand man. I'm a first-rate woman, and because I bring very different qualities.
I think that is a very important point, that we are different.
Yes.
But we still need to be entitled to those same equal rights and opportunities.
Exactly. Yeah, but we bring that different polarity. And I'd say to any woman, you can't do it otherwise. You must be the best woman that you are.
And National Commissioner, do you think that trying to distill that type of attitude across other people will help them realize that, because for instance, gender equality at the moment, it often touches on sensitive points, whether that is from a cultural point of view, whether it is religion, traditional. Do you think by adapting that philosophy, it will help overcome these points for women's development?
I genuinely believe that. You know, because I'll achieve even more results by just being who I am. I mean, I look at how I am leading the police. I'm not trying to be a Fivers. I'm not trying to be a Jackie Slebe. I'm not trying to be a Becky Clark. I am Ria Pierre. And what I bring into the service is very different. Through the eyes of others, they may say, no, she's not Skopskit and Donor, she is my... But I think the results I'm achieving, and I would want to argue that they're even more sustainable, because if you're talking about professionalizing and civilianizing the police and working with the communities, I think I'm better positioned to be able to do it. And I see it happening, because we embrace the communities, we're able to achieve more, because we can achieve more by working with the communities. They are the intelligence of society. They know where this crime is. And if they join the movement of fighting crime, would get further. And I can only do it by being a compassionate and encouraging and a nurturing leader that I am.
And coming from a point of authenticity, which utilizes all of your characteristics, National Commissioner, one of the questions that I ask all my guests on this program who have made tremendous achievements in their respective fields is about the factors which contribute to their success. And I know that in the earlier segment you spoke about your key drivers, but can you tell us about some of the factors that have contributed to your success, whether it was, you know, some of the pivotal moments when you were growing up as a child, what influenced you, and what has left its biggest impact on you to make you the person you are today?
I've told you about my grandmother. I've told you about my father. And I admire him. And he used to say to me, you know what? I used to think that I was unlucky not to have boy children. And he's started saying to me, I'm neutral now in my stance about children. I welcome what God has given me, and I know you can achieve even more. I have girls also. And my mother kept on saying to me, don't you feel like you've lost out something if you don't have a boy? And I said, you know, my father has taught me so much. I just want healthy children, passionate children, because I know that a boy child and a girl child are virtually the same. So for me, really, those things are very, very important. And I want to move to a space where I am saying I looked at my mother too. I had a very strong mother. And she has a very strong can-do attitude. And I still remember long before the BEE and the gender debates, she became one of the first two women to be principals of high schools in Seshego, in my village. I remember Mrs. Patudi became the principal of Kagiso High School, and my mother became the principal of Masidibu High School. And I didn't know about gender issues, but I admired her because I was saying she's doing a job that is done by men, and it's a difficult job, and she was succeeding because I was looking at the results. The moment we start shutting our eyes to saying we can do it, we have the qualities, we have the abilities, and when we have that opportunity, I'll tell you now, I mean, there's just so many things that have been written about me. But I want to say, you know, just last week I celebrated my 3 years. And they asked me what I think. I said, I'll finish my term. I'll finish my 5 years. And when I'm gone, it's perhaps that's when they will say, you know, she was so resilient. And they can look at the things that we've achieved under my leadership.
National Commissioner, when we're talking on leadership, I read that you have a philosophy called the ISE, Integrity, Service to Others Before Self, and Excellence. Can you elaborate on that for us?
You know, I said, you know, it's part of those things where I say, what actually drives me? And I want to say, for me, there is, you know, if I take the I, which is integrity, I call it the ICE philosophy, spelled S-I-S-E. In any environment, job, opportunity that you have, integrity is the strongest currency. The strongest currency that will secure you against everything. Because in integrity sits honesty, sits trust. People, when they look at you, they say, you know what, whatever she says, you can trust that. So it's very, very, very critical. And I can tell you it has worked for me. That's the first one. Then the next thing is I've already touched on it, service for others before self. For what purpose am I here? To live for myself. If I'm living for myself, then I don't need to be investing so much. And I can just get the little bit and whatever. It's to make a difference. You know, leading a life of giving you all. Somebody once told me that, you know, when we come into life as babies, our hands are folded, full of all the gifts and the talents and the abilities that God has given us. And was saying, when you die, your palms must be open. You must have given your all. So that's my attitude in life, to say, I have only one life. I may not have an opportunity to come back and make a difference. What legacy am I leaving? Have I expended all that God has given me? So when I have an opportunity to do so, I really want to leave, you know, having given my all with open arms, having used everything that I was given. So that whole service for others is very important, because make a difference. And I didn't reach where I reached because of my own. Many others opened their palms and made it possible for me to be. And it's a leave, let leave type of approach, lift as you rise type of approach. And you see the joy and the satisfaction. It may not be monetary satisfaction, but the satisfaction when you close your eyes and you know that you have helped somebody to become, it is the best recognition.
So it's you intrinsic can values that we feel.
Very, very true. And then excellence, I'm saying, opportunity, yes. Understand the opportunity. Give it your best shot. So those things for me are very, very crucial.
Well, thank you for elaborating on those philosophies. I think they're vitally important, and learnings to anyone that's listening will take value. We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Zonke Dikana, a South African Afro-soul musician, songwriter and producer. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
Today we're talking to the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service, Ria Piecha. In our previous segment, the National Commissioner elaborated on gender development, her experiences through her mom, through her grandmother, through her aunts, and their significant achievements, as well as the implications of quota systems within government level to increase the representation of women across the board. She also emphasized her specific philosophy of integrity, service to others before self, and excellence. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Now going into the last segment of our discussion. National Commissioner, during your career, no matter what position of office you have headed, you've done tremendous work concerning women's development. In closing our discussion today, can you please use this platform to send a message of hope to all those women in Africa that, due to circumstances, gender equality might not be the first item on their agenda, but rather the daily struggle of taking care of their family, raising their children, putting food on the table for them is a more pressurizing reality.
I've taken you through a journey. I've given you an example of my grandmother and the women I saw in the rural area who were not quite professionals. But when I looked at that village, I just remember my grandmother wearing his church clothes, her church clothes. And we would be in another family, a child would be graduating, an uncle would be graduating. And I saw those gowns, and I want to say, even those ones were there to do. And I moved you to a point where I was talking about my mother and other women that became principals and whatever, and they opened my eyes, and I moved you to now to see the Merkels of this world, the Clintons of today, the Nkosazanas of today, and to start saying, can be done. And what am I saying? All I can say to any woman, dabble with both agendas. And this multitasking must talk to those agendas. If you have an opportunity to work, do it. If you are leading a family, do it to the best of your ability. I've seen domestic workers who have wanted their children to be educated. They didn't know how to read and write, but they strove to ensure that their children get graduated, become professionals, break that cycle of dabble with both. I want to be a professional, but at the same time, I want to be a good wife. I want to be a good mother. I want to be a good aunt. I want to mentor the girls in church. So dabble with both agendas. That's the biggest message I can give. Dabble with both agendas. And I want to say, go for self-actualization. Know where you are going. Actualize yourself. Just work hard and make it happen. And feel good after doing it. To say, I did it my way.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner. You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance. And we have been talking to the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service, Ms. Ria Piecha.